Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled Selling Your Business with Gary Van Sistine. Every company owner wants to build a company that lasts and can provide for their future. When it comes time to get out of the business, we need to find someone to buy this machine that we've built. That's not always easy to do. Tom, you've listened to this program already. Is there something that surprised you?
Well, Bill, I found it interesting that even if a potential buyer is going to get a loan through either a lending institution or the SBA loan, they really like to see the seller's financing as part of the sale. This ensures that the seller still has skin in the game and helps to ensure future profitability of the company.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, Tom. You know, one thing that I found, quite honestly, a little frustrating is the alphabet soup of acronyms that's used. Gary defined some of these acronyms and phrases like SDE, EBITDA, multiple of earnings, and more. Well, this month's presenter is Gary Van Sistine. Gary has over 35 years of sales and marketing experience in Northeast Wisconsin, as well as areas throughout the U.S. Gary owned his own ad agency with 16 employees for over 25 years. As a result, he understands firsthand the process of owning and selling a business and all the factors that are involved. Gary is eager to guide clients through the exit strategy or help them locate a business to buy. His past clients will confirm that he has built a reputation as a client-centric bulldozer. He always goes the extra mile for his clients and diligently works to help them through the buying and selling process. A true communicator and a seasoned leader, Gary knows how to successfully put deals together. As a note for you, this program is a recording of a live discussion between Gary and myself. As a result, the audio isn't as clear as usual, but the content is worth every minute. And now, with Selling Your Business, here's Gary Van Sistine with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this session that we've got going today, really the session entitled Planning to Sell Your Business. Our guest today is Gary Van Sistine with Creative Business Solutions. We are thrilled to have you here today, Gary. It's great to have you part of the meeting.
Thanks, Bill.
So with that, let's go ahead and get started here today. Again, this is a program that we are really excited about. You know, Gene Heacock and I do a training on succession planning, and as we're working with contractors with succession planning, there's a couple of stats that we share. Number one, you know, that transition of businesses. You know, a lot of times, a lot of the companies that we're working with are family-type businesses, and they're transitioned inside the company. And two of the interesting stats that we share in that program all the time is number one, just the transfer of wealth from one generation to the next is a bit of a challenge. Statistically, 70% of the wealth transferred to the next generation is lost by the end of the second generation. 87% of that wealth is lost by the transfer to the third generation. Yeah. But really an area that hits close to your heart, Gary, is the actual business failures after the transitions. So many times we transfer them within the family, and we haven't done an adequate job of preparing for that transition. Statistically, 67% of businesses fail by the end of the second generation. Right? Wow. 90% of businesses don't make through the end of the third generation. If you're in a successful third generation business right now, you are in rare company. Right, the air is pretty thin up there, right? And you see this all the time, right?
Yeah,
we hear this, the stat, we kind of chuckle about the stat that's there is, the first one built it, the second one milked it, the third one killed it, right? And so we don't want to have that happen, right? And certainly you've dealt with some of those, Gary, where, the businesses aren't doing so well and, they're not surviving that. And one of the other, pieces that's there is as Gene and I talk about that succession process, the number one question we get is, how do I go about transitioning the company, right? How do I go about selling it? How do I go about really selling this thing, right, and getting my money out of it? Now, sure. I have to ask the question, Gary, right? So, we've got here, your title is intermediary. That sounds like mom and dad trying to settle an argument between the kids. What is an intermediary? What do you do?
You know, it's when people come to the table, let's say, to talk about a business transition, a business sale, we'll say, they all come with their own, you know, ideas of what they want the business to finish up with. Mm-hmm. The seller, of course, would like to sell and make his funds. The buyer, of course, would like to buy and get a good price.
Sure.
So when I listen to both sides of that situation, someone's got to take a few notes, mm-hmm. and then start getting them done in an orderly fashion so that you can answer their questions and say, well, let's back up. Let's get a value first. Once we got the value, then there are things that are going to go with that value. You're going to sell the business. You're going to keep the building. No, your daughter wants to stay on as a salesperson. Believe me, intermediary is the right term because there's a lot of loose ends.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's helpful to know that, at least understand that piece of the puzzle. Now, again, you're with Creative Business Services. You guys have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
All right, so 1979, if I remember correctly?
Yep. And the owner started really in Door County, which is a real traveling vacation area in our state, and, selling bars and restaurants, which are difficult to sell.
Sure.
So along with that, that's about 30 miles from Green Bay, and he transitioned, moved into Green Bay, opened an office here, and I am, I think, one of nine now, we're adding a new one, salespeople, account execs, if you want to call it that, that work in the area to buy and sell businesses. And it's a lot more than just bars and restaurants now. Believe me, it's manufacturing, it's distribution, it's a lot.
You have grown. There's no question about it. Yeah. You know, one of the things that, again, as I had mentioned, the number one question that Jeannie and I get as we're talking about the succession piece of the puzzle is, how do we sell the company, right? So how do we, how do we go beyond that? And there's certain things that are outside of our area of expertise, mm-hmm. right? And so that's where we bring you in, right, to help us with that piece of the puzzle, because really that transition piece is a whole business of its own, right? And it's well beyond what we do. Now, we also have to clarify one item, right? As Gene and I are talking about that transition process, we could have to kind of differentiate between these three areas, right? We always hear, well, there's succession planning, right? In other words, I want to figure out who the next person is, who will the next leader of this company be, and I need to pick my successor. And many times, it's a smaller business type of a mindset, right? So, mm-hmm. I'm going to pick somebody. It's going to be somebody with here. Maybe it's one of the kids. Maybe it's one of the current employees, that kind of thing. Who is the right person that we want to be dealing with? The second is transition planning. Right? So transition planning is, I already know who the replacement is going to be. We just need help making this happen. And then the third one is an exit strategy. How do we get out of here? One of the programs that Gene and I did, we'd go around at the beginning and we'd ask everybody, what's your timeline? At what point would you like to be at? We had one gentleman tell us that if there was somebody in the meeting room that wanted to buy his business, he'd be done today. Right. So that's a little tough, I think, right?
Yeah, I'll say.
Now, today, we're really focusing primarily, on transition and exit, correct? Mm-hmm. Is that piece of the puzzle that we're focusing in that side of it. So we're going to do a couple of different things. And again, remember, as we're going through this, if you have questions, go ahead and type them in. We'll give you opportunities for that. So we're going to break this into a couple of different areas. Okay, the first one of those, starting from the buyer standpoint. Now, Gary, you act as the intermediary. Right. So sometimes that means you're working with the buyer and sometimes you're working with the seller
and both.
And sometimes both. Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. Right. So let's break these apart. Let's start about talking about the buyer side for a minute. What do the buyers want?
The buyers, are, if they're serious about buying a business, either they're going to add something to their existing business, mm-hmm. in the same business that they're in. Or they may see an opportunity to add a particular service that they're not offering right now. Mm. So first of all, the buyer has to prepare himself or herself. They have to prepare themselves to know what's going to be the best fit for me and how do I grow my business and what kind of place should I be looking for. I've given you some examples as we talked here, but we'll get to those. But then if he or she, again, is decided that they are going to buy something, Now, do they merge their business because they've already got an existing business that happens to fit, it's in the same category, and it will work very well to grow their business? Or do they, in fact, want to just buy it and it may be a different business than what they've got?
A separate standalone
mm-hmm. business, exactly.
Okay. Perfect. Now, there's a number of different items that you kind of deal with. Right. Mm-hmm. So cover some of these, if you would, you know, some of the considerations that you're dealing with from the buyer perspective.
Mm-hmm. Again, that buyer has to do his homework first. And the size may make a real, real difference for him, because if he himself is not a good manager, he could have problems buying something that's too big, mm-hmm. that it's got too many people. There's too many loose ends. There's services you have to offer. So, you know, keep in mind that unless your skills are really at a high degree, you do your homework and buy something that fits well with your current business, I think.
Okay.
Location. Working with one of your customers here, he's got a business in the state of Washington, and he's looking at buying another business that matches with his, doesn't offer the same service, but he's a little distance away from his location. So he's got to consider that travel time between the two of them. So it's worthwhile to really, you know, plan.
So in that case, he's actually growing his geographical footprint.
Exactly.
Through this acquisition.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, of course, which industry? That's fun. I was telling Bill about a customer I am working with. He sees an opportunity to add another service to his business, but he doesn't have that right now. And to start that would cost quite a bit. So he asked me if I would search for someone who might want to join him, make the item that he wanted exclusively for his company, and he knows he can add that to his existing service. I'm going to see it develop because I've gotten them together. It's going to be fun to see what happens.
Sure, absolutely.
What situation there, I think, is a personality-driven decision. Let's say engineers. I'm working with another gentleman. He runs a real nice company. He's a trained engineer. Mm-hmm. And the buyers that I bring in to him have to understand that he's an engineer. He's a very technical thinking guy. So you got to make sure that the situation fits what you think you can add to your business. So don't try to do something that after one meeting you can say, I don't think I can work with this guy.
Sure.
That's not good.
Doesn't do either party any good at that point. Because it's a certain culture change at that point, isn't it?
Exactly. And this guy has solved some questions for people outside of his industry, mm-hmm. merely because he's a technical thinker and he's pretty smart. So therefore, His whole motive for operating is pretty set in his place. He's run the company for 40 years, so he's ready to move on.
Okay.
So timing is perfect. I mean, for him, he's got a place in Florida. He's down there now. He's down there all winter. Mm-hmm. He comes back to the Wisconsin area. So he knows it's time for him, and he will make a good transition. He's a smart guy. He'll work with a new owner. He understands there's transition time, so it will be very nice to see this happen.
Okay. Well, good. Now, let's stick with the buyer side for just a moment again, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, there's a couple of other things. You know, what does somebody like your company do, an intermediary do for the buyer itself? So, mm-hmm. let's talk about a couple of these items. First off, listen and hear their needs. What do you mean by that?
You know, a buyer comes to us and says, hey, I am a contractor, and I feel like I've got some good expertise, and I've got a category I'm not covering right now. So give us the details. Tell us what you've got. Tell us where you think you can make a profit with this. And also let us know what kind of funds you have to work with so that we can find something within your budget. Most businesses, if they're running well, have a financial statement, have a profit and loss statement, they can be taken, do a valuation, work with the buyer, and you can get them financed, believe me. Today's world right now, the interest rates are reasonable, And that buyer should have some guidelines as to where he or she is going.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So part of that is hearing what they're looking for at that sure. point, what they sure. want to do. Okay. Sure. Discuss a strategy plan for search.
Right now, the internet has given us a research capability that never existed before. We can put in business codes called Knox codes. There's another one that we can put in, SIC codes. And we can get for that buyer a series of businesses that are available. He can give us parameters like size, locations, maybe only 30 miles from his current office, size, management style. So we can get all of that stuff from today's research, and it's easier than it used to be, let's say. Once we have that, we can work with the buyer. He can pick or choose where we should go, and it's a lot of fun.
Okay. Research potential businesses. Mm-hmm. Sounds kind of obvious, yeah, right?
Same thing.
Kind of falls into the same area.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. Present a list with a best fit.
We just talked about that.
Okay. So yeah. really, again, just getting really there, you're talking not so much a list of businesses, but as much criteria within, mm-hmm. let's call it the personality of the business. Would that be valid?
Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay. And then discuss and prioritize, obviously, which of these areas are most important. Or?
Sure. The buyer, believe me, they're in control. I mean, if they've got funds that they can get their hands on, and they've got an idea that if they could buy something to add to their business, let's say in the $800,000 gross sale business, just a number to mm-hmm. talk, we can find that. We know where they are. They're, all the research is available, and we sit down with the buyer, and we can present them a list and say, here's 10 businesses within 30 miles that fit with what you want. So we can call them, we can email them, and discuss what you're looking for.
Got it. Well, this next list then is gets more into I think the nitty gritty mm-hmm. of what we're doing, right? Mm-hmm. So the first one, conduct due diligence and problem solve. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, again, this buyer, when I talk to a potential seller, I have to take the buyer and make sure that he understands that he's got to have the cash available. So I'm going to make sure that I've got a financial mm-hmm. statement from this buyer that says, I can perform, I can get the loan, I can make this work. So, and there are problems that come up, so you have to help them through that.
So you're actually helping them. In other words, you're saying you're not going to bring a buyer to a company if they don't have the financial wherewithal to do it,
correct,
right?
Correct.
So serious offers only, right? You don't want tire kickers?
Nobody wants a tire kicker.
Right? Yeah, and that's actually, it's right. interesting because right across the street from our studio here, there's property for sale there, and on the sign it says "serious offers only" or "serious inquiries only," right? Mm-hmm. So again, they don't want to deal with tire kickers. Tell me that you're just checking it out to see what's there, right? So okay, schedule one to 10 showings.
Well, and in most cases, the sales that we work on with customers are confidential, so therefore, the seller doesn't want someone walking through his business in the middle of the day with a potential buyer talking about this and that and the value of this and his employees. So we normally schedule showings off hours, the end of the day, or even on weekends because I want to be present. This sounds kind of selfish, but I want to be present with the seller and the buyer because I need to know the kinds of things that they're talking about and the questions, because I'm going to have to answer those. So
it's tough to settle the argument if you weren't involved in the argument, right?
Believe me, yeah, you bet.
Sure. In a lot of those, that makes again perfect sense, because in a lot of cases, the seller hasn't made it public to his team
exactly.
that he's looking to sell yet.
Exactly.
Right, so we got to kind of keep that. Handle that one delicately. So. That would certainly be appreciated. Help write the letter of intent in the offer.
Letter of intents are not ones that are going to be performed. Believe me, they're not binding. Letter of intent, you kind of, I told Bill before, you kind of spill your guts. You kind of say, this is what I'd like. If everything was perfect, this is what I would like to buy this business and add it into mine. So, understanding that we have some boilerplates that we have written or helped to write for a letter of intent, But in most cases, I would go through the buyer, go through him, and go through that letter of intent, let him show me the things that he likes, he doesn't like, and then usually work with his own attorney to complete the letter of intent.
Okay, so it's kind of a starting point, if you will.
Exactly.
And really, if two questions that come up all the time is, number one, do I need to have a letter of intent?
No. No, you can go right to an offer to purchase. If the business is there, you've looked at the financials, you looked at the marketing package, you know how many trucks they have, they know what their volume is, and you know what the building costs. No, we can go to a direct letter, offer to purchase.
Okay. Should I have a letter intent?
No,
of intent?
You don't have to.
Okay. Because again, sometimes you don't need it, but you really should. Right. So
it's a better way to operate because it lets the seller learn that what the buyer wants. And the buyer then can clear his mind to say, once you put things down in paper, you kind of organize your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's helpful for both the seller and the buyer to have the ideas written down as to what is going to transpire. Once they agree on those terms, then we can write an offer to purchase.
Okay, and it sounds like it just answers a lot of questions.
Exactly.
Possibly.
Exactly.
Okay. That makes total sense. And you said the letter of intent is not binding, right? So it's kind of a starting point in the negotiations.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Good. Most good business attorneys write a lot of letter of intents. I mean, if they're a practicing attorney in business law, they know about letters of intent.
Okay.
And they've written them before.
Okay. Facilitates transaction?
Sure. All of the details, you know. Make sure that all the codes are met. Make sure that all the payroll is met. Make sure that all the taxes are paid and up to the time of closing. So there's a lot of details in a business transaction. But, I mean, I've done it. I've got them written down. I know about them. So.
And this kind of reminds me. So we're talking here about what, you know, what you do for the buyer, but a lot of this impacts the seller, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a big way. One of those, for example, we work with a group of test and balance. That whole trade in the mechanical side, and of course the owner or a key person in that company needs to be certified properly in order to maintain the certification they need for that company. So when it comes to the transition of that company, it means that part of that process is the buyer needs to have that certified individual or needs to hold the certification themselves. And that process may take several years to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of those cases where having this discussion with you earlier rather than later might help out, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least be talking to those governing boards. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that certainly helps. Let's kind of shift gears here a little bit, right? So that's all been talking about the buyer side. What do you do for the seller?
Mm-hmm. The seller is a lot of times, it's even like the interview with the buyer. The seller has got ideas of what he or she would like to transpire. Do they have it in their mind that they want to sell? Now, they have no family ready to take over the business, mm-hmm. so they want to sell. Now, how much do they want to be involved after the sale may result in a merger rather than a sale.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a merger, the company taking over the seller's business may want the seller to stay on for as long as a year. Some sellers say, no, I want to be done in 6 months. But in some cases, I'm working with an engineer company right now. They make metal. They're in the piping business, mechanical. And the owner is only 61, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'll stay on and run the company for 3 years. I said, wow, 3 years. Okay. That gives me different buyers than it does if it's not one that the guy wants to stay on and run the business.
Sure.
In this case, and he's very capable. His business runs well, shows a profit. So in that case, that would be a nice merger for someone.
So, okay, so that brings us into some of our items, right? So specifically, what do you do for the seller? Right? You talk about the first one, want to find that perfect buyer. Is there a perfect buyer?
Well, I'm going to use the example of the guy I just talked about.
Okay.
He's a mechanical contractor, got a very nice business. I think he's got about 20 employees.
Okay.
And I started doing my research when we met at first, and I see that some of the major firms that are in the industry he's in, two of them are represented in his market. And the third that I have, that I know the owner, is not represented there. So I think that I may have the perfect buyer for this guy's business, because this other company should be represented in that market. So there are perfect buyers. They're not available all the time, I can tell you that, but through the search, you'd find them.
Okay. So you conduct this search. Now, one of those things is, let me continue on with the list for a second, right? The second item is you know, they want to reach their goals and their dreams, right? What do you mean by that in terms of the sellers?
You know, the seller, of course, has worked his time in the industry. Let's say he's got 20, 25 years. He has certainly got some goals in selling his company as to how much he is going to need for his retirement plan. Mm-hmm. I'm working with a gentleman now. We did a valuation on his company, and he said, that's less than what I thought it was going to be. I think I better run my business for another 2 years before I decide to sell it. So, and that's fine. That's his choice, and that's probably the best thing he can do, is to continue running his business.
So in his particular case, the business wasn't going to bring enough for him to retire.
Exactly.
Okay. So he needed to hang in there a little bit more. We'll talk about a couple of items there here in just a few minutes as well. So some of those considerations, will the company be bought, acquired, or merged?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
In a lot of cases in this particular economy we're in, we know that the money for purchases is out there. Mm-hmm. If you're running your company well and you've got a nice profit, to find a buyer isn't as difficult in this economy as it has been, let's say, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So selling it, you will have some real people looking to add your business. You have to keep your books clean. You have to keep everything ready so that if you're going to make the transition in a sale, you can make that pretty much as seamless as possible.
Mm-hmm. So that brings up two questions for me again, right? Number one, the first one that always comes up is you say you have your books clean, right? And when we talk about having the books clean, we talk about that certainly in our business training all the time, right? Have the books clean, keep your personal and business stuff separate. Right. Yeah. A lot of times we go, well, the business buys all, pays this personal. We deal with a lot of companies where the company is making their mortgage payment. And that starts to get really ugly because now we're commingling the funds. And we deal with it on the taxes side of it. But when it gets to you, then it gets really ugly.
Here's my answer. And this is real easy question to answer. If you, in fact, are taking funds from the company, they're your funds. You can take them. You own the business. But let's say you're doing such as what Bill said, you're paying this and you're paying that from your company. You are now taking income, let's say over a 5 and 10 year period, that should be reported as profit for your company. In a lot of cases, then you end up paying tax on that. But if you take that now, when it comes to selling the business, you're going to get less for the business because you've taken some of that money from the business that you would get at the sale.
Right.
You've taken that premature or before the sale takes place. So
you're not going to get it twice.
Nope. The value of the company will be affected by what's happened on the records, on the books, on the P&L.
So one of the situations and a prime example that we ran into, we hear about these things regularly, right? Because when we're working with contractors, we're helping their cash flow. We're helping their profitability. Right. So I remember a particular case that we had where, again, we show a company had very high retained earnings showing on the balance sheet, yet they had no money anywhere. And so if they didn't have the liquid cash, right, retained earnings, the chunk of that should be sitting someplace. Well, they the owner of the company took the money and bought a lake house. Now, again, as you said, it's his money. He can do what he wants with it. But if we're using company funds to buy the lake house, now is the lake house the property of the company, right? Because again, the balance sheet, when I go to sell the company, still shows all this profit should still be there, and it's not. That is going to come out in the end, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because when we put a value on a business, we do three methods We do the P&Ls. We do the balance sheet method also. And what Bill was saying is the same thing, because at that time we go to sale, okay, the company's value is not as high as it could be, but the owner took that previous to the sale. So therefore, you get your money now or you get it at the time of the sale.
Sure, yeah. The and then the other question that comes up is all the time is, yeah, that we talk about is, Gene was working with somebody at one point in time and he asked them the question, you know, what's your plan for getting out of the company? And the response was, what I want to do is I'm going to hold a 10% net profit over the next 3 years and then I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going, solid plan. Excellent. What was your net profit for the last 3 years? And they go, well, we lost money the last 3 years. Well, my question is, look, if you lost money the last 3 years, how are you going to make money? You know, what are you going to change? And so part of the process in getting your company ready to sell is, are you profitable? Are you making money? Right? Because if you're not making money, who wants to buy a losing company? Right? So let me ask that question. Do you find buyers for companies that are not profitable?
Difficult. Difficult.
Right? Because they want a return on that money.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
Now, I will say this is I work with one particular company who has a plan to grow through acquisitions.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically what he is looking for is companies that are not making money.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why he's looking for companies that are not making money is because that way he can get them for a steal, right? Because they're not profitable. He's basically buying customer lists and geography.
That's right.
Right? And the business owner, really, they don't have anything to sell because he hasn't done anything to make the company profitable moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So
very
that
true.
Comes up as an
yes,
issue.
It does. Well, you can grow your business by marketing, advertising, adding the right people. Or I've talked to business people. You can do exactly as you just said. You can grow it by acquiring other businesses,
mm-hmm.
which is, if you're a good manager, you can manage that because now you're going to take on more expense. So you better know how you can make a profit with those businesses that you're adding.
Absolutely.
That's
right. He's doing these acquisitions by changing culture and doing everything at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's paying attention
mm-hmm.
to that. Deliver professional efficient service, facilitate successful outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
What would you add to that?
We have a good staff. We have a number of people on our staff that are there every day. So doing evaluations, doing a total marketing plan for the business, those professional things are real important to our. We're involved with a lot of different, I go to a lot of chamber meetings, I go to business planners, people that are in an industry that need to have the networking capable. attorneys need to have access to good businesses. I pulled an attorney into a telephone conference call the other day, and he was perfect because he's got good business background, and my seller in this case was not quite sure what direction he wanted to go. So we were able to bring another professional into the conversation, and it worked out just great. So if we can do that, that helps.
Sure, absolutely. Well, let's kind of move forward a little bit more, right, and get into
sure.
a couple of the questions that Kevin asked, you know, specifically about the evaluations,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, one of those first ones is, you know, what are good reasons for an owner to get a professional evaluation for his business? I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of different rules of thumb that we can use to come up with what a company is worth. Why should I go to somebody like you?
Kevin, I'll answer your question for you in a bit, but first let's get a valuation. We get material out to someone who would like to sell. It's just about 8 or 10 questions that we need. We start with 3 years of P&Ls, and we get a balance sheet and an equipment list and a building value, which in most cases would be an appraisal. So we then input that 3 years into our computer program. We'll use the current last 3 years, 2018, 17, and 16. When we get all the numbers down and we've got the gross profit, we take 2018 and we use that 50% because it's the most recent.
So you weight it 50%.
Weight it. Thank you.
Okay.
We weight it. Then mm-hmm. 17 is 30%. Then 16 is 20%. Now, with the valuation, we are able to put items in there that are discretionary spending items. We'll get to that when we go in to explain some of the anachronisms in the business. They then allow us to come up with a value for the business. At that time, we apply a multiple, industry multiple, and Bill and I talked about this. The industry multiple right now for this type of industry that you work with is anywhere from 2 to 3 right now of the gross earnings that we devise after putting add backs in the discretionary expenses like interest, because a new owner would have a different interest payment than the current owner does, amortization, depreciation, the owner's salary. All of this helps us get a valuation so that when we come to the applying the multiple, we can apply that, then the equipment, then the real estate. So the valuation is so important for a business owner today. You asked how and why should they have these. In your career, you're going to have different life calamities that happen. Health, somebody moves on, a new competitor comes in the market. There's a number of things that can happen. So having a valuation at your fingertips, all of a sudden you say, oh my gosh, I've got to sell that business. I've got to sell it in 3 months. And you need to know what that business is worth. Mm-hmm. So a valuation yearly may be something you might want to consider.
And one of the other things that comes up is, you know, so going a little bit, kind of drilling into that just a touch more, and one of the questions, right, was, you know, where do I get a good, honest valuation? One of the things that is important is to, there's a lot of companies out there that do valuations. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I think is really critical, and you give me your thoughts on this, right, is to get somebody who is aware of the trades. They're aware of working with contractors and the business that you're dealing with. Because right? How much of an impact or an error factor, if you want to call it that, would kick in if I'm working with a company that I have no experience with, right? I'm trying to do a valuation on a company that I really don't have any experience with.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you the formulas that we use today. We have one person on our staff. It's a woman. She has gone off to different schools in different areas for valuation training. And there is a course that she's been taking. So you can apply those industry averages. I was showing Bill a publication that we have. There are rule of thumbs in most industries because, let's face it, in a year's time in our country, you know, how many businesses are sold and how many transactions are there? There's a lot. So we have a good rule of thumb that we can use that we can evaluate different industries. We're doing trucking right now. A lot of trucking is going on, and trucking is a whole new area because of the huge value of the trucks, the equipment that run the company. It was a new formula that we had to make sure and use to get that valuation.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is kind of really what you bring to the table and knowing somebody who's familiar with the trades, right? It's those nuances that happen within a business that right, sometimes the formulas don't always bring to the table.
Exactly.
Right. And so, what are the nuances? What are the other things? So make sure the individual that you're dealing with is familiar with the trades, and they're working with those. They're already familiar with that piece of the puzzle because that will create a problem. How long does it take to get a valuation when you're doing this?
In our particular case, we're doing valuations normally in a three weeks max is what we usually use. And then get them done. The valuation is then yours. You're paid for it. You can take it. You can use it. You can take it, throw it with your accountant, with your attorney, whomever you choose. It's your valuation. Then you've got something and you've got a starting point. And if someone doesn't agree with you, they can tell you why. They may have some different reasons as to why they want a different value.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. I started out saying that there's certain items that we do that, you know, look, this is outside of our area of expertise. Yeah, valuations is one of those. I mean, the individual who's actually crunching the numbers with Create a Business has years of training doing that, and they're certified. You have to be certified to do a certified valuation. And so that's where, again, we lean on these guys to do that. The second thing is That's one of the things that I like about the way that you guys handle things, is because a lot of companies will do a valuation, but it's their valuation. They don't give it to you. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that piece of the puzzle, I think, is important that, hey, as a business owner, if I'm going to pay for this thing, then I want it.
Oh, yeah.
I want it. You know, I want it to be mine when I'm done with that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you said 3 weeks to get it done. It's mm-hmm. 3 weeks from the time you get the information from the seller.
Exactly.
Right? Because a lot of times, again, we ask for it and they don't always get it. And so, so that 3 week time frame. Is there ever a reason to get a valuation if I'm not planning to sell the company?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What?
As I explained, there are things in your life, calamities that happen, health issues that come up that you. Having a valuation in your file is just a good starting point. I worked with a gentleman. He was in his early 80s. He had a wonderful, wonderful company. He was an engineer, and he thought nobody could run this company the way he ran it. All of a sudden, one day he died. So his whole family had to do the probate and everything else. If he would have had a valuation, his family would have saved lots and lots of money.
And we've done with that same thing as well. And part of that process is building the next leader. Right. Because, again, if we don't have other leadership in the company, how do we survive something like that? Mm-hmm. So that becomes a real challenge as well. Now, if a company is looking to sell, so typical cost for a valuation, and I'm because you're going to be the expert on this one.
Sure.
So because it also varies based on the company size, I would think, to agree, or the complexity.
It does. And the complexity, the average is something under $5,000. Mm-hmm. Which would be a good starting point. Now, I've looked at valuations that are that thick, that mm-hmm. probably cost $25,000 to $30,000. In our particular area, and what we're talking with Bill here, we're under $5,000 for a valuation. And it's yours. Remember that. It's yours. You can have it. We'll give you a mm-hmm. copy of it. And it's done with three different methods. And those three methods put together, you can throw one out, you can keep all three of them, you can average them. They all work, and they have to correspond, so it works real well. Let's go back and answer Kevin's question. Kevin, you asked about putting all three together or separately. If you're going to sell the company, make sure you put it all together. That is the place to start. Okay? The business and what the volume is, the inventory, the equipment, and the building. You put it in one package. You bundle it together. Now, if the buyer comes along and can't afford to do all four of those items, then you've got to start doing some creative thinking. Maybe you retain the building and lease it to him for a bit. But no, best to bundle everything together. You don't want to sell the building, the business, and the equipment and the trucks to four different people. One bundle.
Okay. Yeah, and by bundling it out, even if I intend to sell it to one seller, by breaking it out is really no different than breaking out pricing for your services.
No,
it just gives more of an opportunity because now you have to negotiate in four different fronts versus one front.
Yeah, very
okay.
True.
That makes total sense. So, hopefully we answered that question.
The next question was?
Where do we get the evaluation? And we've talked about that.
Yep.
So we're good there. So how do you go about finding a buyer, right? Mm-hmm. I come to you and I say, Gary, I'm looking to sell my company. How do you, I mean, if it's that easy, then I could do it myself. how do you, it's not like you just spread some pixie dust and these guys, show up. Where do you find them?
Well, I'll tell you, the people at my office, they say that, I'm the hunter. I'm the guy who likes it out front there. And, and I do. So if I can start with the business, get it listed, get it priced properly, get the marketing package all together so that we can get that to a particular buyer, I like to develop the list of who I'm going to contact first. Now, today's world, emails can do a lot, but to make business relations really work, I prefer to make a phone call, or in a lot of cases, if I've got the time, I get out of my office and get in my car and go and see people. Mm-hmm. I announce myself that I'm there to talk to the business owner about the potential of some new business. Because you have to get by the gatekeeper to be able to talk to someone. And if you tell them you're there to help the owner sell his business, the receptionist person says, oh, really? Then I'm going to be out of a job, huh? No. You want to at least break down, get in there, talk to the owner. And in some cases, the owner's going to say, no, I'm not going anyplace. I want to keep this business for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So email doesn't always do it, Bill.
I totally agree. Yeah. And you keep lists of people that you've cultivated over years that are interested in buying companies, mm-hmm. and what types of companies they're looking to buy, that kind of thing as well, right?
Sure. We get calls a lot, or excuse me, emails a lot. Hey, I'm looking for this. I'm looking for this. I've got experience in this category. If you have anything, could you email it to me? And,
sure. You
know, I'll take a look at it. And it works very well. So I do, mm-hmm. or I do, and our company has, we said before, a Rolodex, so to speak, a computer file of a lot of people that have contacted us looking for a business. So we might be able to move real fast on that.
Finding the right person there, no doubt. Okay. Good. So let's talk about real estate for a little bit. So if I have the real estate, is there a difference in that valuation with or without the real estate?
Oh, yeah, sure. Real estate, in a lot of cases, of course, financing the business, banks, credit unions, whatever you might use, have a real problem with financing goodwill of a company.
Mm-hmm.
They like the hard assets, like the real estate. Like, let's say, some trucks and some equipment. So they'll loan money on those hard assets. So having the real estate involved, of course, does raise the value of the purchase, for sure. But it also gives the buyer something that he knows a bank will give him a loan on because it's a hard asset. Mm-hmm. And the seller, in this case, also knows that if he wants to retain the ownership of the real estate, he or she can do that and lease it to the new owner of the business for a year, two, three, four, 5 years.
And of course, if you maintain ownership of the building, remember any revenue that comes into you in the form of dividends and rent, right? Sure. So in this case, rent for that building space, there's no Social Security or Medicare that you have to pay on that when it's only federal and state taxes.
And we help write a lot of leases for people, but I always tell them once we write the lease, you should consult your attorney to make sure it's done properly.
Yeah, so to make sure that, because that also then comes in, if I'm gonna keep the building as the seller and just sell the business, I don't really want to be getting a phone call every other day because, you know, something happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there ways that I can protect myself there in that lease?
Sure.
So I'm not dealing with all that other stuff?
Yeah, we talked a bit about this, the triple net lease. Make sure that you, as a landlord, are just having everything paid for, the utilities, the insurance, the taxes, and the maintenance of the building. So you're pretty much out of the whole picture of the real estate owning. But it's a good asset to own. It's mm-hmm. a nice asset to own. But yes, it does affect the value of the business. As Kevin asked us before, putting them all together in one package is the best thing to do.
Yep. Okay, good. We have another question that came in. Okay, so the average time frame to sell an HVAC business. Because some guys want it to be tomorrow, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, so, yeah. You know, Kevin, is it Kevin? No, Scott. Scott, let's start with maybe 6 months, because that would be reasonable time. I can tell you, for me to find, and whatever market you're in, for me to find, let's say, 10 or 20 businesses like yours within a decent distance of your business, if I can contact all of them, have them sign a confidentiality agreement so they don't know who I'm representing here in this case, I'm sure that within 6 months, we can probably get someone that would be interested. Now, you may be involved in the financing. The guy may not have everything he needs to put the deal together, but 6 months is a good starting point. 6 months to a year.
So time is your friend. There's no question about it on that one. All right. Now, we got to talk about one more area here because, when it comes to doing this stuff, it seems like there's an alphabet soup of acronyms. You guys love your acronyms, and it drives me nuts, right? So let's talk about a couple of these just so we kind of go through them a little bit. The first one, SDE.
Very important. Probably the, this particular earnings acronym, SDE, is the most widely used, let's say that. And the industry that you are in, with businesses in the, let's say, $1 million to $5 million gross sales, those businesses most likely will use SDE, seller's discretionary earnings. What they are is the seller has expenses that he can take from the company. His wages, of course, his benefits like insurance, his interest payments on a loan that he may have, so his amortization, his depreciation, those are all expenses that he can control. So the new owner has, as we're showing here, discretionary earnings that he or she can decide how to spend those earnings. Very, very important.
Because, within the company. So,
yeah, within the company.
Because my earnings, my wages, right, for example, that I take out of the company are going to stay with the company after I leave.
Mm-hmm.
So that becomes monies that stay there. So, as you said, owner's wages, any expenses, maybe the retirement for the owner, mm-hmm. that we're putting money aside,
exactly.
The truck payment, because mm-hmm. the truck's going to stay there, the health club dues that I haven't used in 3 years, but we're still paying for, all that stuff, it falls into that category, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So that would all be factored in because all that stays with the company. So that's one. Next one. Whoops. Next one is EBIT.
It's a method also. Usually the companies are a little bit larger because these expenses, the interest and taxes that we're seeing, are expenses. In the other method, the SDE method, those expenses of interest and taxes are added back to get a value of the business at the end of the valuation. So the EBIT is used for another method. For me, I can say I want to find an EBIT business that's got about a 4 multiple on the EBIT. And it helps the determination. That and the next one that Bill's going to show us here is EBITDA. EBITDA is used.
EBITDA?
Yeah. We have companies, right now there's a lot of private equity firms that are out there to buy businesses. And they would contact us with an email and say, I'm looking for a business with an EBITDA of about $5 million. So that's a pretty good sized company because that's the earnings of the company before you subtract the interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So it's what we would say is it's a cleaner way to determine what kind of earnings you're really talking about to buy a business.
So these all fall under valuation methods at that point.
That's right.
So you said earlier with SDE might be a little smaller company. Mm-hmm. We get a little bit larger company. We start getting into EBIT and EBITDA.
Exactly.
When you say a larger company, can you put a dollar amount on
it? Sure. $10 million.
Okay.
$10 million.
So somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Well, good. Next one, multiple of earnings.
Multiple of earnings. Well, that's exactly what we're talking about with the industry average. In this industry that we're in, that we're talking about here, we have a multiple that we have been using. Now, if the business is running very profitable, shows some high degree of net profits at the end of all the expenses, then the multiple would probably creep up to as high as 3, maybe even over 3. But right now,
3 times earnings.
3 times earnings. Thank
okay.
you. Thank you. Exactly. And that would be what we would start with to sell the business. 3 times the earnings. After we do all of this calculation, the equipment, the inventory, and the real estate, if there's real estate involved. So all 4 of those things come in to make the total value of what the business would sell for.
And just to make sure there, because somebody's already jotting those notes and they were, you know, to make sure our punctuation's in the right spot, it was 3 times earnings plus the value of the inventory. Plus mm-hmm. the value, right? So it's not 3 times the inventory in assets.
No,
it's okay.
No.
Got it. All right. Another question that came in. So how do franchise businesses change this?
There's a lot of people who want a franchise business because there is usually less. And this guy with the question may not agree, but usually the risk for franchise businesses is less because a franchise has got some experience. So they can show you this franchise XYZ on an average costs this much and does this kind of volume in business and has this kind of profit. So there is a guideline that a buyer owning a franchise business can apply and then therefore go ahead and buy the business. Now, in the selling side, it's basically the same thing. There is usually a franchise fee to transfer the business. Then, of course, if you've got to lease the real estate and you've got to run the business. And at that point, then you want to pay yourself. So, yes, we've got experiences at selling franchise business.
Okay. So, one more. So the question being, again, you know, would you ever approach somebody in my market that, hey, would you be interested in merging or buying or getting that? That's kind of a delicate situation, right? Because that's, at this point, probably your competitor, isn't it, right?
Yeah. That's why, the most important word in my industry is confidentiality. Mm-hmm. It's really important because the owners of businesses don't want their help to know. They don't want their customers to know, and they don't want their competition to know that they're thinking of selling their business. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do something like that, just contact a firm such as mine, or at least contact an attorney about a confidentiality agreement, mm-hmm. that you can have this company that you're interested in talking to sign the confidentiality agreement. Then you can decide to share your P&Ls, and decide, no, you're still going to need a valuation of the business. So contact someone who does a valuation, then you can really get down to talking to that buyer about potentially owning your company.
But that confidentiality agreement is to have that in place up front. Is so critical. Because again, you approach the wrong guy and they can all of a sudden be going out in the market and going, oh, hey,
exactly.
Joe's Heating and Cooling is selling out. The owner's getting out of it. So we really don't want to, you don't want to deal with that.
Make sure the confidentiality agreement has got some teeth in it also. Mm-hmm. We've got a very good one that we've tested already with attorneys. And believe me, it works and it's a good idea to have one.
Okay, good. Well, let's go one more direction. Inventory and equipment. We had a question earlier that talked about how do we handle inventory and equipment. So just any other notes that you would bring in on this piece of the puzzle?
Inventory is easy. Inventory is usually something that's handled at the end of the sale. Now, you've got records of payables that you buy your equipment to install. So you have in your files, in your computer system, your accounting, what you paid for that material. So at the end of the transaction, we look at your balance, we look at your P&Ls, and there is, $10,000 worth of equipment in your inventory, but it's what you paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not what it may be worth in the market.
What you would sell it for.
Right. So that is then paid for usually at the end of the sale, a separate transaction, a check, just for the inventory at the end.
But that also brings up, again, when we come back to, what we do, a lot of times we'll go through and we'll be working with a company and we see the inventory that's shown on their balance sheet and they'll give us a tour through the building and we're walking through the warehouses going, okay, you show that you got $100,000 worth of inventory. I'm not seeing it here, right? So because a lot of companies don't do a physical inventory. And so again, this comes back again to keeping your books clean is, are you doing a physical inventory at least once a year to make sure that inventory number on your balance sheet is accurate? Otherwise, again, that will come out when the seller is doing the buyer's doing the due diligence at that point.
That's right.
Kind of related to that, one is what about patents? Some companies have actually designed stuff and they hold this intellectual IP.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that?
The equipment was also one on that last presentation. I'm working with a landscape company right now,
mm-hmm.
and they have got $2 million worth of equipment because they do just a tremendous amount of work mm-hmm. in the field. Their inventory is worth $1 million. So their business, and they are very profitable, they're at $500,000-$600,000 for their business. Now you got to add them all together. Their equipment is $2 million. And you've got to pay for that equipment. I mean, it's worth that. There are equipment appraisers that we can put you in touch with that would help you determine what the equipment's worth. The real estate, again, is usually an appraisal. And then the business is a value that we help to put on the business. Patents are fun. When a patent is held by an inventor, in this case, we need to sit down with him, first of all, or her, if they have sold some of the items that they have already patented. We need to know that. Now, if they haven't sold them, it's a little more difficult, but we need to project some sales, okay? They make an item and it sells for $10,000. How many can you project that you could sell next year? 5, 10, 20. So now we can project some income out into the future of what that patent could realize for profits for the person that invented it.
Okay.
And we can help them do that.
Excellent. Okay. So, and I know that we're going a little bit longer than we typically do here, but I think this is good, solid information. And so we want to make sure that we cover this. Again, we are recording it. We'll send you all the recording if you can't quite hang in there with us at this point. Cash on hand, how do we handle that?
Cash on hand, in most cases, stays with the seller. Stays with the seller. The cash that's
my money, I'm keeping it.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
All right. So that's outside of the sale, and I
correct.
Keep it. Okay. Then talking about cash at this point, one of the struggles that we have in today's market is there's fewer and fewer people to buy some of these companies, or at least so it seems,
mm-hmm.
right? And so how do we handle that on the sale of the company?
I can tell you that even the SBA, which has a lot of paperwork to go through to put a loan together, they like to see owner financing in a transaction.
And so the owner financing, the actual owner, current owner, financing a portion of the sale.
Exactly.
Portion or all of it?
No, just a portion. Of
okay.
It. Financing all of it. That's what the SBA does. They
right.
do the major part of it. But what it does is it also says to the SBA, this owner is going to be around. He or she is not selling and then heading for the woods or Florida or wherever you may have. They want to make sure that owner's around. It will help that they know they got a stake in the game mm-hmm. and that they want to see the business be successful. So owner financing is, and you can usually get owner financing guaranteed. You can get it guaranteed with an insurance plan. You can get it guaranteed mm-hmm. with a personal.
So even if the business does go down,
correct.
I still get my money.
Yeah, it can
okay.
be personally guaranteed. So don't be afraid of owner financing. It'll work.
Okay. Question.
You treat accounts receivable as if you were to walk out the door tomorrow. You have to make sure they balance with account payables. Now, okay. the receivables, I realize, in some cases, may be difficult to collect. Normally, if they are customers that you have been doing business with, you have to feel confident that you can collect those accounts receivable and then, of course, do your payables. So if you're a good business person and you have got good customers and you know that in the past they have paid their bills, you should not hesitate to take on those accounts receivable so that you can balance and then keep
you're
your profits.
As the buyer or the seller?
No, the seller.
Okay, so the seller actually keeps the receivables
correct.
Himself, and then
yeah.
when the monies get paid,
yeah.
he gets that
yeah.
money in.
Yeah.
So that's outside of the sale of the business
correct.
Altogether.
In most cases, you've got to get that to settle. Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
your responsibility as a seller.
Sure. And yeah, that also brings up the other point is, again, are they true receivables or are they bad debt?
Mm-hmm.
But the longer that money hangs out there, the less it's worth.
Exactly.
Again, and I deal with companies there as well with receivable issues. Right? And again, statistically, if it's 9 months old, you have less than a 20% chance of ever collecting it.
Move
it's
on.
Not a receivable. It's a bad debt.
Move on.
Right. So absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Recognize it for what it is. Take the write off and move on
mm-hmm.
At that point. So owner financing is an important piece of the puzzle.
Yes,
okay.
It is. Yes,
got
it
that
is.
One. Now, the other terms that come up, right, finding these buyers, right, and an industry buyer versus a financial buyer.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? What is that?
Well, it's pretty self-explanatory. Industry is someone who is in the business. He or she runs a business similar to your business and knows the ins and outs, and they know the profit margins, and they know about keeping help, and they know about making sure equipment is running so they maintain it. That is an industry buyer. A financial buyer is one who's, let's say, has some funds, sees this particular business and says, that business runs profitably. I think I would like to buy that business. That financial buyer would probably not even be involved in the management of the business. They would be gone. But
okay.
they would look at, you know, at the P&Ls, maybe monthly, but they are not physically working in the industry. They are usually outside of it.
So would that would a financial buyer at that point, would that be a case where me as the seller would stay on to run the company?
Yeah,
right?
A lot of cases, yes.
Okay,
yes.
So that might be a case where the financial buyer has seen this company is successful in its past, and so we'll let it continue to run the way that it runs.
Exactly.
with some guidelines. There's always going to be guidelines, right? If you're going to sell the company, you're not going to make every one of the decisions at that point, right? Sure. But we'll sell the company and you'll stay in. That might be somebody who is just tired of running the financial side.
Exactly. And all the details that it takes to run a company. Yeah, having a financial buyer come in, buy the company, but you have to agree to stay on and run the company at least for usually 2 to 5 years.
Okay.
At least that long. You know, or then that financial buyer has to find someone to run that business, and they have to make sure there are funds to pay the salary for that person.
Okay. Good. Well, and again, chances are there should be, if you were as a seller paying yourself a reasonable wage, mm-hmm. right, there should be funds there because those right. dollars are going to stay there. Okay,
right.
good.
Right.
So that certainly helps as well. And then, again, if I'm looking to sell, again, how long does it take to get that accepted offer? Yeah. Again, so you said, I think you had a conversation you and I were having a little bit earlier. You said there's a potential, all the ducks in a row, and I've got a guy standing there knocking on my door looking to buy your company. It could be relatively quick, but six months to 12 months is pretty realistic about a time frame.
It's average. You got that right.
Okay.
You got that right.
Okay.
And what I was telling Will earlier was, and this is an important point for people selling their company, usually you only sell your company once. So, therefore, mm-hmm. having some guidance and some help from people like myself or another company, it will help you through the process, even though you think, well, I think I can do this myself. I've done it, and I've sold a few companies. I could be of help to anyone wanting to sell their company, and because we've only done it once, you don't have the experience. Mm-hmm. It would help to have some of that and get
sometimes,
that accepted offer.
Sometimes you just need a little bit of guidance, so there's no question about that. Yeah. With that, I want to, Gary, thank you for taking the time to come out. It's been a lot of fun doing this. And from there, hey, make a decision to make it a profitable day.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com. Or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.